Up next, we're going to be talking to the world's leading expert on alien abductions. He's the alien hunter, Daryl Sims. Stand by. Daryl Sims, the alien hunter, the world's leading expert on alien abductions, 38-plus years, maybe more, field research has focused on physical evidence leading to his groundbreaking discoveries of alien implants and alien fluorescence. He's a former military police officer, CIA operative as well. Several of his books, Alien Hunter, The Evidence and Truth About Alien Implants, and Alien Hunter, The Evidence in Light. Welcoming back to Coast, Daryl Sims. Daryl, always a pleasure. Welcome, my friend.
Well, thank you so much, George. I'm delighted to be here tonight.
You know, since you were on with us some time ago, we lost Dr. Roger Lear, a great loss, I think, in this field.
Yes, I'm very sorry to hear that.
Daryl, what's new with you over the years? What have you been working on?
Oh, goodness. One of the things we've continued on, of course, is something that I've been working on literally in a very personal way since 1960 is the implant phenomenon. And the reason I'm kind of involved in that and have been for some time is because I was a recipient of an alien implant through my nasal passage when I was 12 years old. And that forever changed my consciousness and thinking about the alien and who he might be and why he's doing what he's doing and so on. So I've been looking for people for years that may have had similar experiences. I just couldn't figure out how this could be. If my events are real and I was conscious during my events, how in the world could other people they must have had the same experiences. They just must have.
Sure.
And my search has simply proven it. And they're out there. And I just came back from a conference in Pittsburgh and found three more people with implants. And when I say implants, I don't mean, oh, goodness, I found a weird thing on my x-ray. That doesn't constitute an implant. And I don't care if you are an abductee. That's not the same thing. When you've got seven of these staple-like objects in a lump inside behind your ear, and it's been verified by your doctor and on MRI. I tend to go along with that. That's quite interesting, especially when there's other witnesses to the effects.
Are these people with implants, Daryl? Are they in shock? Are they scared? What are their emotions?
that's an excellent way to start this. With this individual is a good example, about my age, and he was stunned talking to me, and his two daughters were standing there listening, and he said, well, it might not, it's probably nothing, it's probably this, it's probably that, and one of them's a nurse, and she says, she just shakes her head while he's talking to me, he can't see her, and she's saying, no, it's something, all right. And then they explained to me the medical part of it. And we've had several conversations since the conference. One of the things he brought up was, I'm very excited and very amazed that you know all about this. And I heard your presentation and so on. And then the next email, everything's off. I don't want to do anything. I'm sure I've never had abduction whatsoever. And I said, well, you can have contact and not, you know, be abducted. But you see this on and off thing, and finally he says, well, I just don't know what to do. I just think I shouldn't do anything. And I said, well, this is your choice, you know. But he said, do you ever heard anything like this before? I said, yes. I said, and your behavior is identical to people who most of us are programmed from childhood to destroy evidence, to ignore evidence, or to simply hide it if necessary. And I said, you hid it from your own family for years. And now you're doing it again in front of me after it's already been exposed and it's already been medically proven that these things are not, you've never had a surgery in your skull and we've got a number of objects there and you clearly remember your contact.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's riveting information too. So let's get into some of these implants. Generally, Daryl, explain if you can for us, what do they look like?
Oh, what do they look like? They look like a variety of things. My first contact in 1960 at age 12, the my contact there, the implant, what I saw was a little tiny silver sphere about the size of a small BB on the end of a 9-inch needle-like device. And then it was, they came toward me, and I could hear what they were saying. You hear this on a it's difficult to describe, because they speak in concepts and imagery, and so even if you're a little kid, you can actually get what they're saying. It's not like you're a genius or anything like that. It's just that the concept in which they're portraying this information, it's not redundant, or it's not confused with strange. They can confuse it if they want to, but if they don't, if you're listening to them and they don't even know you're listening, you can hear exactly what's going on. And I did, and I broke down and cried when I was there. I was conscious during the event, and I started crying because I realized what they were going to do to me. And then, of course, the doctor type, whatever he is, came over and inserted the needle up my nasal passage and then jammed it, broke the bones behind my in my nose. And then the object went back behind my eye, and I could feel every bit of it because they did not use any anesthesia whatsoever. And I was in screaming. I was in such pain. Of course, they don't pay attention to that. They really don't care whether you use anesthesia.
Do they realize what pain is?
Yes, and this kind of sounds awful to some of your audience. You're just a piece of meat.
You're just an object.
That's all.
Makes no difference. They put these in. A lot of people have said that they're about the size of a piece of rice, or a kernel of rice, or something like that, a grain of rice. Are they that small?
Well, actually, we have a case several years ago, and a lady came to me, and she had been to a workshop that I had presented. And in the workshop, I showed them how to look for evidence. And her little girl told her, 6-year-old girl, told her about, Mommy, this strange man came into my room. And she talked about this, them putting something in her nose. She said, I did what you said. I had her sneeze in the Kleenex. And she said, and I could not believe what I saw. She said, 4 little tiny golden spears about the size of a pinhead. And she said, and they were so small, and I cleaned them off, and I dropped them on the carpet, and I lost all of them. They're that small. And anyway, she said, don't worry about it. She said, because several weeks has passed since then, and they came back, and she said they left another 4, and here they are. And so I got them. But these are about the size of pinheads. And a doctor looked at them, and a professor at York University, under the care of Dr. Nick Malakas, and he was stunned. He said they look like little miniature planets. They're like a moon, you know, with little craters on them whenever you look under a microscope. And he said, what do you think that is? And I said, I suspect that they're putting, I said, I don't like to use the word medication because I don't think that's what it is. I said, but they're putting something on it that over a period of time in those little craters, it would get used up. And then when that's done, when they're finished with that part of the project, you'll simply sneeze them out or swallow them, because it doesn't make any difference.
Right. Or do they ever dissolve away, Daryl?
You hear this from time to time, and I've heard stories like this, but I've never had one of them in my possession. And I've done 24 surgeries thus far since the 1990s on these objects, one of the last ones being up in Flint, Michigan. And I've never had one of them disappear. Some people say they do, and I have to accept that as a possibility, because the witnesses said so. But I have no real medical evidence that actually happened.
Do we have a collection of these objects? You must.
I do, sir. And the collection is quite odd, because your initial question, what do they look like? This is where it gets a little confusing, because they're everything in the world. I mean, I've got one that looks like a tiny egg, looks like a little tiny egg about the size of a grain of sand. And we think it housed a biological camera during a mass abduction of 8 people in 2 states and several cities. And this was in the lady's eye, and she thinks that they were watching what we were doing for a three-day period. And the reason that fascinated me is because we took the object, we never got the biological camera, but 3 days later, after the mass abduction, this thing fell out of her eye in front of her boss at work, and the boss made her bring it to me. I did have it examined and looked at, and it is it's the ceramic for all practical purposes. That's really strange. Some of them, we found four of them were lined up four in a row in a man's knee. He went on a camping, on a hiking. He doesn't claim to be an abductee or anything like that. He just said, I went camping and went on a hike and came back, and he said, with a knee injury, and I have no idea why. He said, I have about 4 hours missing time. Went to his doctor. His doctor said, I don't know what they are, and sent to a specialist. The specialist removed them and says, I don't know what these things are. He said, they're tic-tac sized, four of them lined up in a row in your tendon in your knee.
Jeez.
So those are not naturally occurring, and I don't know what they are, and you will not use my name in any disclosure about what these things are. Those appear to be some type of a plastic, of all things. So we have plastic, we have ceramic, we have one object that they have an x-ray of that was found in a lady's tooth by her dentist. Now, this freaked him out. He goes into the tooth to find out what the problem is, what the anomaly is there.
Yeah.
And when he hit the metal object, little tiny object, it was kind of cylindrical.
Embedded in her tooth.
It broke his drill.
Oh.
They patched her up and put some paste on that thing and sent her home. Don't want to talk about that one.
What do you think these objects are used for, Daryl? I mean, like you just mentioned, one might have been a little camera. Are they recording data from the body? What are they doing?
I think that that's a fair assumption. When I say that, I mean, they're not tracking devices because the alien already knows where we're at and who we are. They already know that. They've known that since, in fact, they're following your lineage and have been for some time. And they don't have to take everybody in the family, but they do take certain people within a family lineage. And it may not be your immediate relatives, like your brothers and sisters, but if you'll ask grandma, grandpa, and others in the family privately, you'll be amazed to see the things that you'll hear simply from them describing events very similar to your own. But my definition of an alien implant is it's an implanted device or an installed, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Neurochemical or action potential process in which the alien entities, in some reflective way, leave a signature that is actually definable. You'll actually be able to find that signature either medically or psychologically or even in the scientific process. In other words, it may be a physical implant that you can see and so on. In other cases, where we found that the neurochemistry of certain people were tampered with. Now, this is told to us by neuropsychologists and neurosurgeons that some of these abductees' neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine seem to have been altered in some of these abductees.
That
simply means is whoever runs your neurotransmitters, they run your business. They run your emotions. They decide whether you're happy, sad, glad, or not.
They turn it on, turn it off anytime they want.
That they can do it, and they do. And this illustration with this gentleman I was speaking about, he says, what do you think's going on with me? I said, I think that it's programming. I said, even your interest to do something and then your immediate interest not to touch anything or do anything because it might upset them. And I said, in fact, if you fall for the whole line that they put out, I said, you're referred to in our terms as a contactee. I said, if you don't like what's going on and you question it and you want to do something about it, you're referred to as an abductee. He said, what's the difference? I said, well, one of them, in my view, and I said, they're both fine people. There's nothing wrong with either of these groups. It's just how you accepted the programming.
Right.
And in my case, I said, I refer to abductees as killer bees. And in other words, if you come to steal honey, you're going to pay for it. And we're honeybees, really wonderful, sweet, nice little honeybee people. The little funny guy in the white suit shows up and the large black eyes to steal the honey. They don't seem to mind at all. They actually think he's supposed to be doing it.
Huh. Huh. Now, you put together a team of surgeons to work on these cases, haven't you?
That is correct, sir.
Were they reluctant initially, Darrell, to get involved with this?
Some of them really were. And the fun thing about others is I had a good example here. I had a MUFON group. It was MUFON LA at the time. And I took about 2002, I think it was, I took one of my abductees to meet a cardiovascular surgeon, and there was a brain surgeon present, and of course myself, and then I had about half of MUFON, the MUFON LA people there, Jolene Ray Harrington and others as witnesses to this event. And the cardiovascular surgeon was one that approached me about the whole thing. He was fascinated. He said, "I think what you're doing is groundbreaking, and I think," he said, "I want to be a part of it." So we looked at the guy's x-ray in the back room, and when I say, I don't mean like a little light box that you see in the doctor's office.
Right.
Inside his office in another section, there's a whole wall of nothing but light boxes. And so here's this brain surgeon who's never seen anything like this before, and the cardiovascular surgeon who's excited about it, and he looks at the object in this guy's leg, which I call the AOLer implant, which it looks like a triangle with a little white dot in the middle of it. And he said, "What do you think this is?" And I said, "Well, the guy's a mechanic." I said, "He's clearly an abductee, in my opinion, no question about it. He had 7 scoop marks down his leg." And I said, "I think he's a mechanic." I said, "He crawls right on the ground working and things like this. I think it's a shard of metal from his work. And that's a little tiny cyst or a growth in front of it. And mm-hmm. that's all it is." And the brain surgeon looked at me and says, "I concur." And the cardiovascular surgeon says, "What do you want to do?" And I said, "Let's take it out." I said, "We don't want to be afraid of anything. I don't care whether we think it's good for us or not." I said, We can't be choosy about this.
Natural or otherwise.
We have to be fair to everybody about it. So I removed it and sent it off to a lab in England. And they sent back the data and everything. Of course, they don't know what it is we're looking at. And lo and behold, said it's low-grade metal, probably something you'd find in the junkyard. I laughed and told the surgeon about it. And he laughed and he said, "You were right." And I said, "Well, I know what it is I'm looking for. And I know what it is we don't need to be looking for."
Darrell, let's say of 10 people who come to you and they say, "I've got some kind of implant in me," how many of them may have implants from these extraterrestrial or stranger sources?
Well, the two answers to that, and I'm glad you brought up that second half. The first part of the question is all 10 of them, in my view, are going to have to get a medical evaluation so that I can actually look at that. I have to be able to see that, number one, something there, because some people have a lump on their shoulder, a little bump or something, and they may be an abductee for sure, but they ought to make people think that they have an alien implant. And implants actually are quite rare. And I don't care what people say or what's being sold to people. They're quite rare. And that's number one. They're going to have an X-ray or MRI. And then I want to look at those carefully with myself and other doctors that we have to work with us. Number two is if they pass that process and they follow up on the questionnaire and all the other things that we go through, then certainly we'll look at it. And we want to do two things. One is to look at the object and study it in situ in the body while it's there without mm-hmm. removing it. And the second thing is at some point, if the individual chooses to, we'll go ahead and remove it.
Darrell, hold on for a sec. We're at the break. We'll come back right at this spot and talk more. Fascinating. Darrell Sims with us, the alien hunter. Indeed, and of course, the Holiday Magic Co-Style CD is available for you just in time for the holidays. It will not be available forever. It ends, of course, as we lead into New Year's Day, so take advantage of this. So many people donated their time and efforts. Whitley Strieber, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, UFO Phil, Joshua P. Warren, Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top, and, of course, the great Pat Boone even donated his voice.
Oh.
So you can pick up the Holiday Magic Coast Style CD. Simply go to our website. It benefits Veterans Charities. Go to our website, click the highlight reel, and it'll take you to Amazon.com, and you can order it, and it'll get there right there. A lot of people are giving them away as gifts, as a matter of fact. I had my Coast chat today with insiders, and one of them had received it already as a special gift from one of their friends, and they just thought it was just fantastic. So go ahead to our website, coasttocoastam.com, click the highlight reel. You'll see the picture of the CD. Click where it says more, takes you to Amazon.com, and you can order it. You'll be in business for the holidays. Welcome back to Coast with the alien hunter, Daryl Sims. And, Daryl, we were talking about your criteria for people where you get them checked out medically before you even decide if you're going to go in there and extract this object. Once you get to the point and you say, all right, we're going to remove it, what do you do? What's the system in place?
Well, the first part of the system, after we get everything done, paperwork and everything else, and what it has been in the past is to simply go forward and to remove the object with the appropriate kind of doctor that we have to have. And but it's still, this is very strange. We've some people they freak out literally. In the OR, I had one of them freak out. Two doctors came to me one time and said, oh, my God, the guy is freaking out. He's changed his mind, and we're ready to do this. We're ready to go. We've already done two, and now we discussed the last one. And I said, so what do you want me to do? And they said, well, work your magic on this guy. You're a hypnotic anesthesia therapist and hypnotherapist. Get in there and fix him. I laughed. That's okay. And I asked the guy, I said, do you want to do this? And he said, yes, but I'm scared. I said, so if you weren't scared, you'd be all right. And he said, that's right. And I said, then you'd want to. He said, yes. I said, so you're agreed. And he said, yes. And I looked at him and I said, like that. And he fell over instantly. And we wheeled him into the other room. And next thing he knew, the surgery was over. So it's called an instantaneous induction. And what I did was to lower his energy at a certain point, and he went into an automatic state of deep hypnosis, which often the alien uses as well. I think they use something besides hypnosis, but it's kind of like it, and it's very effective. And he went through his surgery fine. But I'm telling you that people literally on the right there in the OR can change their mind simply because some of these people are led to think that they're betraying their captors. And that you shouldn't be doing this. You should leave this alone. This is a gift or something. You know, they tell all kinds of whoppers to these abductees to get them to buy into the story.
Now, when you extract these devices and you have them analyzed, do they cut into them? Do they break them to try to figure out what they are?
Unfortunately, some people have done that in some of these events. One of my colleagues did that once and infuriated me. He actually had one of them sawed in half and radiated. And I said, you did what to my implant? I was furious. Anyway, I think that's a bad way to do it. The point being that these objects should be studied out of the body, but the casings around these objects are extremely important. Look, in 1994, I presented to 250 surgeons at the John Muir Medical Hospital on a continuing education program. This is a place where they paid me $300 to speak for an hour on medical complications of alleged human alien contact implants. Now, this was before anybody knew what an implant was. And these 250 doctors are sitting there stunned listening to this stuff. They're not really that happy of being there. But when I finished my presentation, three of them came on board to help us. And so I was quite grateful for that. But in that, I made five predictions that are four that have already come, that were came to pass during the first surgery. The first prediction I told these people, I said, we have not operated on any of these people that I'm showing you the x-rays of and MRIs of. I said, well, when we do, if the objects are alien, if they are alien, there will be no chronic or acute inflammatory cells around the object. And, of course, naturally, most of the doctors didn't buy into that because you get a splinter, or you get a metal shard in you, or anything happens to you from explosion or a spatter effect, gunshot, it doesn't matter. Your body is going to attack that object and surround it with these inflammatory cells to protect the body, wall it off from the body so the body won't recognize it. And that's just what it does. Right. If you can't do that, you'll get an infection and you have to deal with it some other way. So that's the first thing, that there'll be no biological covering around these objects would not show any inflammatory cells present whatsoever. The second thing is that there would be nerve cells present that would be inappropriate to the affected area. In other words, it's not native to that area. It doesn't make any sense. The third thing was that the objects would be absent of any discernible technology if they, in fact, were alien. And of course, everybody's like scratching their heads, like, what? Mm-hmm. And then the fourth thing was that the implants that we would be looking at once they're removed, whatever they were, whether they were metal, plastic, ceramic, or whatever, would be, in my opinion, passé, and from 5 to 50 years old and out of date, literally.
What are the possibilities, Daryl, that some of these objects could be alive?
Well, now that is a distinct possibility. The last thing I told them, actually two last things. One of them, I said, I'm sure some of you are going to be asking the question. Number one, if these things are passé, what does the real stuff look like? And I said, well, in reality, in my opinion, you're going to, this is where you doctors come in. And I think when these people come in and tell you that they've got a strange object that wasn't supposed to be there, that's there, you need to examine it. And especially if it, in fact, is biological in order. And I said, when you examine that, if it is, in fact, alien-related again, and it is biologic, one of the new biological ones I think we're going to be looking at in the near future, it is going to stun you. One of the things you're going to find is probably central nervous system cells or brain cells around that object or that biological mass. Basically, what you're going to have is a little tiny mini brain wherever you find it in the body.
Daryl, you are now embarking on a new project with DNA testing. Tell us about that.
The DNA testing is, to me, one of the most promising, and in fact, an MIT professor told me one day, he said, I think your work on the DNA area, and of course, he only knew one part of it, and the part that he knew about was just the fluorescence that I'd found on the abductees. Now, fluorescence, for your audience, is simply imagine the alien touching a human being and leaving a sweat-like substance on them. The sweat-like substance is exuded from the body of the alien and left on these people, and it penetrates the skin on subdermally on contact. I mean, it's very effective. It will stain the skin for all practical purposes, and fluorescence it's rather remarkable because, number one, it provides us with two things. One is evidence, in fact, something really occurred. I mean, you know, if you wake up from sleep paralysis and you've got an implant in your shoulder or in your head, and you wake up with fluorescence in the form of three long fingers that glow in the dark on you that can't wash off, you can't get it off in any way, shape, or form, and neither can your doctor, that's probably evidence that it wasn't just sleep paralysis. You had some other event going on. So the fluorescence gives us two things. One is actual evidence that something actually really occurred, that you were really actually touched and taken somewhere. And number two, and this to me is extremely important, it is in fact that we now have started cataloging the fluorescence on some of these abductees. We've got about 15 samples so far. What this means is we have, for the first time in history of the UFO field, a database of alien DNA, whatever that is.
How close do we know that it matches us?
So that's a great question. I really love your questions. So far, we actually, what I haven't told others is that we do actually have some DNA from an alien from an experience. And the DNA that we do have, in fact, the late Dr. Levingsgood told me and one of my abductees about this, and he said, you guys actually have the smoking gun.
Oh boy.
I said, why do you think that? What does smoking gun mean to you? He said, listen, they said, I've studied cattle mutilations for over 40 years. He said, we have evidence of the alien, the mutilations of these cattle and animals and sometimes people. We have evidence of that. We've proven that. There's no question about it. He said, the thing now, what you have, he said, and it's stunning, is you have DNA from the alien present in from the alien, and we also have part of the mutilation inside the alien's DNA. So what you have, and the way he framed this for your audience, it's to make this really easy. He said, look at the slides that I'm showing you here. And I said, okay. And he said, what do you see? And I looked at the first slide and I said, I'm not really qualified to make these determinations. He said, just tell me what you see. I said, it looks like an animal cell. And he said, that is correct. And I said, and? He said, what do you see in the next slide? And I said, oh my God, that is so strange. I've never seen anything like it. He said, tell me what you're seeing, Mr. Sims. And I said, my God, I said, there are plants, it's like shoots of a plant growing out of the animal cell.
Jeez.
He said, that is exactly correct. He said, you have the smoking gun. Whatever that meant to him before he passed away. And so we do have the DNA. We are having stuff like this looked at. But we've had, I got to tell you, George, we've had three DNA people help us, and all three of them have walked away.
Shaking their heads.
Without saying a word.
Just they're in shock.
Her job threatened her. I don't know how they got into her emails to me, but they flat said, if you do anything, you work with him, you discover or do anything with that DNA that he's got, you are fired. She said, but I'm doing it on my own time. He said, you will be fired.
Are we saying, Daryl, that these ETs may be, a portion of them could be animals or plant life?
You are so observant.
I study this. That's amazing.
Well, it goes back to one other thing. I want to touch one other thing on the implant, if I may, before we get off of that.
Sure.
There are implants, and my assistant, who passed away 2 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, she was a good help, and she outlasted the doctors. She was about 80 years old, and she was supposed to die when she was 30-something from a heart condition, and she lasted a lot longer than anyone ever thought she would.
Jeez.
But one day we were working on the book, my book on implants, and alien implants and the truth and evidence of it, and she said, we need a good zinger for Chapter 7. And I said, oh, okay. She said, well, you mean you have one? I said, well, of course. She said, well, what is it? And I said, do aliens have implants? And she sat there, she said, oh my God, what a wonderful thing. And then it hit her like a ton of bricks. Well, do they? I said, of course they do.
What a great question.
She said, you want to explain that to me? And I said, okay. And I said, the alien, I said, fasten your seatbelt because this one's going to sting a little bit. I said, the alien is an implant. He's nothing like you imagine. He is manufactured, hatched, cloned.
Who's making him, Daryl?
He's made for the purpose of interaction with mankind. He, in fact, is an implant. He's a collection of them. The alien is nothing like we understand.
Do we have any idea? Are we talking about these ETs coming from a specific location in the universe? Where might they be coming from?
How about near here?
How near?
In the solar system.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir.
Are they like in a craft? or on a different planet?
No, they actually have a film of a craft 600 miles across and 50 miles thick. It wasn't taken by us. It was taken by someone in the science business looking toward the moon during our mass abduction of December 8th, 1992.
It's like a floating city.
It was, and the eight witnesses that were there, there were more abductees there than our people, but eight of our people there, and they all told the same thing, same story, same everything. Apart from each other, they didn't get to discuss any of this with each other and have it all on tape, of course, and all documented. The bottom line is this. While they were there, some amazing things happened. One of them, and I think your audience will love this, on board the craft, when they were finally taking our people back, they were walking through this gigantic hall. The engineer that was there with me that was describing it for me, was my senior investigator at the time. He said, Daryl, he said, this hall is so big. He said, I can't even begin to tell you the immense size of this hall. And he said, we're walking through it, and we're all instructed very carefully not to look around, not to do it. It's quite dark, fairly dark. It wasn't totally dark, but fairly dark. He said, but we were instructed not to look. And of course, 99% of abductees, our contactees especially, are totally obedient. You know, blind mm-hmm. obedience and fear, that's all they know. And I said, you peeked. And he said, I did. I said, what did you see? So I looked over at one of the things that was in the shadows, and as we got closer, there was light on it. And he said, my God, he said, it looked like a platypodon. A platypodon is kind of like imagine a dinosaur that's an elephant-like dinosaur, quite old. And I said, so what do you think about that? And he said, I got the distinct impression it wasn't dead.
Huh.
And he said, I don't think anything in that room is dead. They were all in suspended animation.
Jeez, a collection.
It seems.
That's amazing. No wonder you keep doing what you're doing. This is
exciting. When you hear some of the things from some of these abductees, one, of course, I require, his hearing is not enough for me. Of course, as soon as he told me the story, and they said, yeah, well, I said, you know, that sounds great, but I didn't tell him. I knew the other seven people had told, you know, similar story. And he says, well, I thought you might think that craft was way too big. And I said, it's pretty big, isn't it? And he said, yeah, I have a bit of a problem with it. He said, I thought you would. He said, so I brought the video.
That's
I said,
amazing.
What? And he said, being an engineer type, this is what they do. He said, I found a video taken of the moon during that time of the mass abduction, and it appears to be the same thing. He said, it's of immense size, and you can see it going, the shadow of it going across the moon during the time of the mass abduction.
I wonder if that's what the astronauts saw. I'm wondering if Armstrong and Aldrin saw something like that when they got there. Daryl, stay with us. We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to talk about abductions, and we're going to take phone calls from you, questions. Maybe you have your own stories with the alien hunter, Daryl Sims. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM.